the Ark.
Welcome back, everybody, to Hour 2 of the Ark Midnight Intelligence Briefing. I believe we are in, precisely, as the title of that particular piece of music goes. I believe these are soul wars, absolutely, positively. What else could they be? I haven't spoken with David Morgan in a long time. Do you know, we go all the way back to episode 295 on May the 21st of 2015 and visited again, number 665 in 2017, then 754 in 2017, and then 980 in 2018. He's back with us now on the 10th of September. And I'll tell you what, it's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program this man who is widely recognized as an analyst in the precious metals industry and consults for hedge funds, high net worth investors, mining companies, depositories, and bullion dealers. Publisher of The Morgan Report, a world-class publication designed to build and secure wealth. He's the author of The Silver Manifesto and a featured speaker at investment conferences around the world. His ideas were expressed in the movie Four Horsemen, the Four Horsemen film, a feature documentary. He's been on CNBC and Fox Business and Yahoo Finance and BNN in Canada, been interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, Futures Magazine, Investing Rules Book, and numerous other publications. And tonight, what we're going to get into is effectively, to reset, the elites need to collapse the current system, and it's designed to collapse. But I'll let him tell you the stories. We welcome back once again David Morgan. David, great to talk to you again. I can't believe it's been so long, but I'm glad you're here now.
Well, John, it's great to be back with you. Thanks.
So what are we going to do? You know, I was just reading this heinous story about what happened in the years after World War One. Now, people go, World War One, please don't bore me with that. I said, no, it's well worth remembering what happened to, when a railroad strike happens and then everything else strikes, and when mounted police attack a hungry, literally hungry mob, and then the mob killed their horses and ate them. I mean, it's just, this is how it gets when people are really, really hungry. And now starvation events are forecast and supply chain shortages. And, oh, we're going to go to a digital currency on December 13th. Could you sort of coax us out of this with your intellect and show us some love about this so we'll feel a little bit better about this phalanx of stuff that's facing us?
Well, I would really love to do that. I will try to be as objective and logical and factual as I can. Of course, in this realm, you have to use, you know, some discernment all the way through, of course. And there are some conjectures. But the main thing, you already jumped the gun on me. I'm joking in a way. But I think the first thing to point out, and almost all of your listeners would know this, but the financial markets really at this point in time have almost nothing to do with the physical economy. The physical economy is based on production. It's based on energy primarily and everything that stems from that, which is, of course, you know, transportation, communication, growing food, all these things. And we have been in a contraction for some time now. But as the real economy or the physical economy is contracting, at the same time, not like this last few months, but up until recently, new highs in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, new highs in this S&P 500. And this gives some people, in fact, probably the majority, a false sense of security that if their earnings in their 401k or their RRSP in Canada or wherever they happen to be is a bigger number, they feel more secure. Because I've dedicated my life more or less to the idea that money transcends almost everything in the human experience in the earthly realm. We'll get to something much more important later, but this is exactly something that touches everyone. It doesn't matter what nationality, what continent, whatever, money is important to them. And so the system, as you said, is designed to collapse, but the physical economy is not matching financial markets. Now, there are some exceptions there, but for the most part, a bigger number really means nothing. Coming to what you already opened up with, which I was saving for later, was there's a balance in nature. If there is a something in sixth grade, you know, science, you learn that if there's too much of a certain predator species, then nature will bring up the predator to it, and there'll be balance over a year or two or three. Well, it's the same thing here. There are a lot of people talking about this massive inflation, which is true. But what we're really not talking about, and you already brought it up, is that, look, the supply-demand depends on not only supply, which we're losing a lot of food supply, but it also depends on demand. And if we're losing a lot of people, then they could balance. And this is really hard to spit out, but as I said, I will stick to the facts. And I think our listeners know that there's been this adult sudden death syndrome and all these mysterious people that are dying and uncertain cause and all this type of thing. So in my view, study view at that, there is a definite genocide going on, and it's by design. And of course, I'll put on the conspiracy hat for that, but I've got the facts to back it up.
Well, the conspiracy theory hat is the tinfoil one. This is an actual conspiracy. If it isn't, then I don't think conspiracy actually exists. So we'll all be wearing tinfoil sombreros just to point out how our lack of being able to think critically. So I wonder how many millions of people are going to be lost eventually. I mean, I'm seeing all sorts of awful stuff. As a matter of fact, as you said that, there is already a medical crisis declaration, 10 September 2022, declaration of international medical crisis due to the diseases and deaths correlated to the COVID-19 vaccine. I mean, really? We're really living through this? Yes, we are. So, first of all, how do you wrap your head around this? I mean, you're in the what's the term? The catbird seat. You can you can see it. You've got the bird's eye view of what's happening. I mean, this has been your profession for many years. So, first of all, what should we tell ourselves to get ready for a crisis that we are completely unfamiliar with and have really no idea what form it will take, other than shortages? I mean, what else will there be?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, we can use the Great Depression as, you know, looking back in history is a good way to look forward. And, you know, a lot of people starved to death in the Great Depression. That's not often mentioned. It's true. The problem between now and then is this, that most of America was agrarian back then and were much more self-reliant than they are now, which means a lot of families, mine included, if you go back to my grandmother, moved on the farm. Well, the farm, I learned later in life, was like 1 acre. But you grow a lot of food, raise rabbits or anything else on an acre land. And the moral structure, and this is my point, is what was far higher during the 30s than I think it is now. So since we're almost all dependent on the corporate food machine, on these packaged food, and these huge farms that are monocrops that are really unhealthy, and we have very little options in most cases to do anything other than go to the grocery store to shop. So there will be, it'll be somewhat random, meaning, you know, if you're in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and you're an Amish and you're third generation or fifth or tenth, doesn't matter, life for you there is probably not going to change very much. But if you are in downtown Manhattan, living the good life and everything's done because you have a lot of currency in your pocket, your life will change drastically. There are a lot of people that listen to your program that understand what's coming, and that means that they have to be more self-reliant. They have to be basically sovereign. I mean, they need to take responsibility for their moves and decentralize as much as they possibly can and link with others that think the same way and are willing to work together. That's about the best way to get through this on the short or longer term. And it's happening. I mean, there are groups that are coming together, people are like-minded. And I'd say, you know, giving credit to you, myself, whatever, it's not really about taking credit. It's about getting information to everybody. And as you said, let them critically think and determine. But guidance is always good, especially when Absolutely. You have the ability to do so.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You got me going here. Well, now, when it came out that... Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. We've got a little delay here. What were you going to say? I want to hear you, not me.
That's fine. Well, I was really pausing. I was waiting for you if you had another question, but I'll just add on to what I was saying. The main thing that I think we've lost in our society has been our moral convictions. The idea that the Constitution isn't even taught in school anymore. I mean, I'm of an age where, you know, I learned in, you know, second, third grade, you know, when I said the Pledge of Allegiance and liberty and justice for all, I really meant it and I really believed it. And then as I got older, I was given Brave New World in 1984. And, you know, whatever God had in mind, I was educated, not schooled to some degree, of course, but also educated that things were not right, that the idea of, you know, liberty of the government of the people, for the people, and by the people shall not perish. Well, folks, it's perishing if it hasn't been gone already. I mean, so the idea is that the way you made this great, and in that film you mentioned, the Four Horsemen film, you know, I was filmed in there, a clip here and there, and before the MAGA movement at all, this was years before that. One of my tirades was about what made America great. And I was talking about how our society has been conditioned to the best food, the best restaurant, the best clothes. I got season's tickets to the Yankees in a box seat. I fly first class, all this stuff that's peripheral, but I call it stuff. I said, that's not what makes America great. It's not what we produce or the ideas of, you know, we've got higher materialism than other nation states. What made America great was integrity. That's what made America great, was that we could live our word. Our word was our bond. There was very little breaking of the contract. And now, of course, you know, it's very rare that people live by their word, as you well know. So I'll sum it up there, John. Back to you.
Well, it's just, I think you're entirely correct. We're focusing on the wrong things. And I have to tell you, just not just because this is considered to be fringe or alternative radio, it's interesting that fringe and alternative is alternative to what? In my opinion, Dave, the number one enemy of the state is the mainstream media, because they will not tell the American people what's really going on. We have to do a show like this and talk with someone like you at length as often as we can. There's only one like you, but I mean someone who's paying attention and who is educated, not schooled. That's the biggest problem we have. That's the second biggest problem, is the young ones coming up are schooled, but they're not educated. So I'll just toss that out there and back over to you.
Okay, well, that brings one of my favorite stories to mind. I was at it was actually a solar energy convention thing up in Northern California. I've been out of that state for over two decades now. But at the time I was there, and I randomly went up there to look at some more solar stuff, and it turned out to be this big shindig, and Ralph Nader was there. And so Ralph got out of this car and got on stage and started speaking. I don't remember much of the speech, but this part of the speech I'll always remember, and I use it often. And he said that his family was pretty intellectual, and they had, you know, family dinner every night, and they had discussions. He said one evening his dad asked him, "What did you learn in school today? Were you taught to think or were you taught to believe?" And I'll never forget those words, because that sums it up very succinctly of how the system has been designed for a very long time. You're taught to believe. You're not taught to think. So, again, I'd say that is probably the second biggest problem we have. And one thing about this reset that the elites keep pushing on us, where we'll have nothing and be happy, is a system that's designed to fail. I have a degree in finance, and that doesn't make me better than anybody. In fact, what you learn in finance is some good stuff, but you also learn a bunch of garbage. And some of these equations in economics are just hucky puck. They're really not designed to do anything other than to confuse most people. Back on point, one thing that the finance people majors will never tell you is the, as Warren Buffett calls it, or many others, compound interest being the eighth wonder of the world. You know, that idea that your money can make money. All you have to do is put it in the bank, leave it at interest, and away you go. So that's a false statement. And that's why if you go to the Bible, you'll find out that every 50 years there was a debt jubilee, because that kind of a system can only go for so long when it fails. I think one of the best ways to illustrate this, especially for our listeners, is hypothetically, if God gave Jesus a penny and it was compounded at 2% per year since the time Christ was born, it would be now would be worth 218 followed by 17 zeros. I don't even know what that is. 218 trillion trillion.
Wow.
Now, that's a number beyond belief. And if you took it in today's equivalent, you're looking at about six planet Earths. So what my point is that you cannot compound interest. That will fail at some point. And it really has failed. We just haven't admitted it to ourselves that we have a failed situation. So the idea is it's designed to collapse. The financial elites certainly know that. And they need it to get to a state where people are willing or even begging for a new system. And unfortunately, the way it's set up is that the money powers retain that power through control of the currency, which means that there's a good chance that these bail-ins that are at law right now and bailouts are now unlawful are probably in our future. And unfortunately, my take on it is that it's probably more likely to happen than not. Bail-in is when the bank takes your deposit and gives you a share of stock in their bank as a replacement. So look, to be a little more fully explaining this, you are considered in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in Cyprus, in Spain, and other countries, not all of them, that if you put your money into their bank, you are an unsecured creditor. And in the event of a problem with the bank, that it doesn't have the money required to, let's say, meet a margin call or make a interest payment or whatever it may be in the banking system, they have the right to take your money, which is theirs by law, and use it to meet their obligations. And now you have an unfunded account, and what they'll do is give you a share of stock or shares of stock. This has already taken place. It took place in Cyprus. It took place in Spain. It's taken place in other countries. Lehman Brothers, for example. On the Lehman Brothers bailout, the people that finally got a return for every dollar they had with Lehman.
Can you pick that up again? We lost your signal.
I'm sorry about that. Oh. In the bail-in with Lehman, when they were exchanged money for stock, they got 8 cents on the dollar. In Spain, they got 5 cents on the dollar. So this is fact. This is what's already taken place. Cyprus was roughly 5 cents on the dollar. Are we going to see that directly or not? I don't know, but it's at law. I think people should know about it, and that's why I've advocated for a long time to get some of your currency out into money, gold, silver. Certainly, it's a way to protect your financial health. It won't save you, but it certainly will give you some backup, let's say, that's widely recognized worldwide for thousands of years, whereas if you are vulnerable to the cash-only system, which, of course, they're pushing toward a cashless system, you are very vulnerable, in my view.
David, let me ask you something. Do these mechanisms just take on a life of their own along the algorithm, or is it all planned? I'm thinking Zimbabwe, $10 trillion. I've got a $10 trillion note around here somewhere. Or Venezuela, like Weimar Germany. Is this planned? Are these guys that smart? Is it corruption or is it incompetence or is it both?
I think it's both. I'm glad you brought it up because this is one of the other points I wanted to make tonight. First of all, I want to back up a little bit and just announce what, again, most of our viewers know. But the Vatican, this is rumor, but it comes from too many sources, so I have to voice it, and I believe it to be true. The Vatican announced recently that all central banking systems assets around the globe in almost every country must.
Had a dropout again, David. The Vatican issued this decree. Just take it from the Vatican issued this decree.
That all money must be returned to the Vatican, coin money, including gold, silver, all deeds and debt collection related to the world banks, housing markets, loans, everything returned to the Vatican between by September 30th. So this is a very interesting piece of information, and I'll say it's a rumor. If it is true, it goes to what you asked me a second ago, and that is, are these things planned? And I said it was both. There is a film from 1981 called Rollover.
Yep.
And in that movie, the Arabs withdraw all their money from U.S. banks. And that movie is pretty accurate, in my view, to what would actually happen. And what happens is pandemonium. It crashes all the money markets. Gold goes through the roof. There's no trust left in the system whatsoever. And the currency fails. In fact, in that movie, there's a scene with people burning currency on the White House lawn. Now, I'm not saying that's exactly what's going to happen, but I'm answering your question. And the question is, are they so powerful that they know how to orchestrate it and they can control it? And the answer is no. There's too much randomness in human affairs, and especially when it comes to something that's a safe, some that everyone believes is safe or safety, and that's, you know, how much money they've got in the bank. That's their safety valve. It's a cushion. It's reliability. And when that fails, and it's failing before our eyes, and we've lost trust, very hard to get it back. And that's what they want, in my view. They want to take it down to a level that everyone's begging for the new system to come along. All we need to do is take that old bank account that doesn't work anymore, put it into the central bank digital currency system. You get this little tattoo to prove it's you. It's part of your DNA. No more cash. You're in the system or you're not.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the timing for the midterm elections. The date that I saw was December 13th to do this. And, of course, the midterm elections are barely into about a month before, so that'll give them enough time to move around. I really would like to have a lot more time to talk about these things with you, David Morgan. I hope that you'll make a little bit of time for us to come back and let's talk about this before things get really deep and people who could be prepared are not. God bless you, sir. Thank you for coming on tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you, John.
We'll be back after this brief intermission. This is The Ark. It's got a nice little groove to it. I like that. I'm reading a little something from BayouRenaissanceMan.blogspot.com. This is intense, too. Saturday snippet, one woman's nightmare experience of hyperinflation. As we attempt, there is no telling where Michael Yon, who's coming up here pretty quick, there's no telling what part of the world he's in. any more than... We know where David Morgan is. Sounded like a an extra special kind of technological communication device that he was using there, but maybe that's just me. As the ARC Midnight Intelligence Briefing rolls on, the news that natural gas costs in Europe are already 10 times higher than a year ago and likely to go higher this winter has sparked near panic in European governments. Electricity generation is directly affected, so overall energy prices are likely to reflect a similar increase. The average consumer in Europe simply cannot afford this. Factories and businesses are likely to close at a much higher rate than before, throwing more and more people out of work and affecting the quantity and quality of food and consumer goods available to residents across the continent. All those factors have sparked widespread alarm about inflation possibly turning into hyperinflation. Those fears are not far-fetched. And they apply as readily to the USA as they do to Europe. Trouble is, far too many people still reject any such possibility. They breeze along from day to day complaining about rising prices, but refusing to accept that the rise may accelerate so fast as to render their very existence a matter of day-to-day survival. Sadly, there are literally millions of people over the past century who could assure them that the danger is real. Okay, we have made contact with Michael Yon. I say again, there's no telling where he is. So let us all pray for a hot signal. Okay, as we visit with him once again. Welcome back, Michael. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, John. Slight technical problem. Got it worked out. I'm in Netherlands still. I'm heading back to Germany today. Actually, I was heading back a few days ago, but it's been raining very hard the last 3 days, interestingly. So I just worked in Netherlands. And it's interesting because there's been quite a drought here this year through large parts of Europe. Much of the corn around me here is really brown. So anyway, I'm going back to Germany today. I'm going actually to Ludwigshafen, which is where the BASF plant is. The BASF plant is where Germany creates a lot of its nitrogen-based fertilizers from natural gas that comes from Russia. Now, that's not the only plant in Germany that does that. In fact, there's about 28 plants across Europe in general that are now, that used to make natural gas, or used to make nitrogen-based fertilizers until a few months ago. And until the last year or so, that have stopped making the nitrogen-based fertilizers due to the price of natural gas or the just shortage of natural gas. Not really a global shortage. We know it's out there. It's just not flowing due to various reasons, such as political reasons, and the prices are skyrocketing. This has a huge effect, of course, as we go into 2023. We're living off of last year's fertilizer right now. And next year, Europe is it's not creating nitrogen-based fertilizers right now as we speak. So, you know, what's in the warehouses now and what's already in the fields, you know, being harvested this year is what's going to be setting the table. So that's why I'm going to BASF today. I happen to be going there. That, by the way, is the plant at Ludwigshafen that first started making these nitrogen-based fertilizers in about 1915 or so. Actually, it's called the Haber-Bosch process. And Fritz Haber was a German chemist who invented this process in about 1909. And he could just make a little bit of ammonia in a beaker using natural gas and combining it with atmospheric air. And he would create ammonia. And from that, urea and ammonium nitrate and some other things. And so he started that, and then Bosch, Carl Bosch, also a German chemist, is the one that took that process, the Haber process, and brought it to the industrial scale. That's why they call it the Haber-Bosch process, and they started that in Ludwigshafen, where I'm driving back to today. I was there also about a month and a half ago. Massive plant, and it's going out of business slowly but surely. I mean, it's still creating chemicals. It creates many other sorts of chemicals. But the plants across Germany are just shutting out the lights right now due to the, what can we ascribe this to? Due to the war with Ukraine or is this really more to do with the globalist agenda, which is pretty transparently due to the globalist agenda, right? Because even though Germany's blaming Russia for shutting off Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2 has never been open. So Nord Stream, just think of the two arteries in your throat, Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 2 has never been open because Germany won't certify that to open. And Nord Stream 1 was flowing at full force until Russia cut it off earlier this year. And then Putin turned it back on to 22%. And then more recently, on about August 31st, I was up all night watching the flows online. There's a little site that tracks the flows. And because he said he was going to Putin said he was going to turn off Nord Stream 1, and he did. So it's been turned off now since, what's the date today? About the 11th, right? So it's been turned off for about 11 days. Germany's probably not going to make it through the winter, probably get to about, looks like February or maybe January before they run out of, or they really run out. They're going to be very cold. But the bottom line is, even in the midst of all this, Germany is still shutting down its nuclear plants on December 31st, right? So you can't blame that on Russia, right? The Germans can't blame shutting off the nuclear plant. Meanwhile, France is opening up 32 of its reactors. And by the way, these reactors aren't just something that you can just flip on and flip off. Like, it's not like a coal-fired plant where you can just, stuff some coal in there and light it up and get going again. I mean, these things have a, they have a flash to bang that's quite long. And Germany is still shutting out the lights despite all this. I'm sorry, John, I should let you talk, but I mean, I'm glad you called me up. There's a lot to talk about here.
Well, that's what I want you to do. I'll participate, but I mean, this is about you. This is not about me. It's amazing. So that's weird. So Nord Stream, what, one or two or both of them?
Nord Stream 2 has never been open because the Germans would not certify it. They have to basically give it a check and say, okay, it's good to go. Now, earlier this year, Putin was saying, hey, you should open Nord Stream 2. You can have a lot more gas and, of course, Russia can make more money. And then we get the war going. And then, of course, the Germans are the ones dragging their feet on opening Nord Stream 2. But then, of course, as the wars dragged on through the year, I was in Lithuania last year, by the way, warning about this. It was pretty clear that something was building with the Russians and that sort of thing. But the bottom line is Germany is blaming Russia for the energy problems. It's simply not Russia. It simply is Germany. And it's causing it's collapsing Europe in general. I'm in Netherlands which is right next door to Germany. I mean, it borders Germany. I'm like an hour from the border right now. And so I'll be in Germany, earlier this morning. And so when Germany, which is the biggest economy in Europe, there's 27 countries in the European Union, by the way. And when Germany collapses, which it's clearly going to do, they're going to take all these countries like Netherlands with them. I keep talking with the Dutch people, when Germany right now, the Germans are cutting down firewood all over the place. I was there a month and a half ago. They've got their equivalent of one of their stores that's equivalent to like Home Depot is called OBI, right? So I went into OBI looking for firewood because they actually sell firewood in stores like that. In Germany, you have to have a certification to get wood out of the forest. It's not like America where you can just go out there and, grab some wood out of the forest. And so they sell it in these places like OBI, and they were out, and they were like, as soon as it comes in and we can't get enough wood, for people to burn in their fireplaces, as soon as it comes in, it's gone out the door, and right now there's people on waiting list. So Poland's chopping down forests, Romania's chopping down forests, all this, like Romania's over there chopping down virgin forest so that the Germans can have firewood. I mean, so, all this green energy, they're chopping down the forest right now as we speak. Because they know this year, this winter, Germany is going to freeze. And I mean seriously freeze. They're setting up heating stations now. They call them heating islands. And these heating islands that are being set up in Germany will be in places like school, gymnasiums. And these are places so that people don't freeze to death. They'll be able to go to the gymnasium and get warm. So that's interesting. So the German tribes will be able to meet at the heating islands with the Somali tribes that they've welcomed all over. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many quote-unquote migrants there are all over the place. I was just in Luxembourg, stayed there for, a week or so. Little Luxembourg. I haven't been there since I was in the Army. Last time I was in Luxembourg, I parachuted in. When I was in Special Forces, we were training to parachute into Poland, actually. But we last time I was in Luxembourg, it was a nice country. Now I just went back. It's about 50%, 50%, migrants. And I was watching drug deals all night and day long out my hotel downtown in Luxembourg City. Keep in mind, Luxembourg, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, used to be the jewel that people would want to go visit. Luxembourg City, the capital, when people went, that was the epitome of old Europe. And now it's basically dangerous to walk at night. It's unbelievable. I mean, and they just, the World Economic Forum, the globalists have just, they've captured Luxembourg. It's interesting because my hotel was right across from a monument for U.S. forces. It was on a Liberty Street, actually, called Liberty Strasse or something like that. And it was, where U.S. forces had liberated, the Luxembourgers in World War II. And in fact, I went to the U.S. National Cemetery there where General Patton is buried. I was just there, a couple weeks ago. In Luxembourg, it was liberated back then, and now it's been captured by people that don't speak any European languages. It's amazing. I mean, I was watching fights on the street, numerous. It's just out of control. Drug addicts all over the place. people urinating on the sidewalks downtown Luxembourg City. It was a paradise before. And so you see, this is what's happening to Europe, even as they clearly are going to, the conditions are set. Everything's about conditions. It's not about sparks. People ask me all the time, what will the spark be that sets these things off? It's not about sparks. That's amateur talk. Professionals talk about conditions. You know, if you have a firework factory blow up in a rainforest, the rainforest is not going to catch on fire, or at least it'll go out in a couple hours. But, you know, if you have a spark go off in a dry forest, well, the whole thing goes up and takes the town with it, right? And the conditions for Europe right now, with millions and tens of millions of people that speak languages that most people don't even know the name of the language, are all over the place. Crime is through the roof, rapes and murders. Meanwhile, the economies are collapsing. They're going to be freezing this winter. Meanwhile, like here in Netherlands, they're prepping the local. There's no law that says that you have to take migrants into your home, but they're psychologically preparing Dutch people here in Netherlands, saying that, you know, you may have to take migrants into your home if you have extra rooms in your home. If it's a bad winter, you may have to take people in. Think about this. These are people they don't even want here that are being forced upon them while the globalists are taking the farms away from the Dutch people. I was just out with another farmer the other day. You're not going to believe this, John. He has 160 cows, right? In fact, I'm going to take Jordan Peterson to see him in a couple of weeks. Jordan Peterson is going to come over here and I'm going to take him out to see some Dutch farmers and whatnot. So I was basically doing a recon talking with this farmer. So I'm at his dairy farm. He's got 160 cows. You know, it's an ancestral farm. He's got it from his father and on down the line. So we're talking. He's a really interesting guy. English is very good. So he's got a small farm, 160 cows. I said, you know, why don't you have more? And he goes, well, I can't have more. In fact, the government inspects him regularly. If he has like 161 cows, you know, he'll get a huge fine. And he said, in fact, they track everything that he buys, thing that he buys for the farm is sharply tracked. All the output, the milk that he produces is tracked. Everything that he does, inputs and outputs are tracked. He said if he got one or two or three or four extra cows, they would notice just in the numbers. This is amazing. The surveillance state that's going on here in Netherlands. I mean, this is supposed to be, in fact, I was talking with somebody today from one of the political parties that he called me up about. You saw that Steve Bannon had been arrested and wanted more information, like what's going on in America? Why are we arresting, why is our country arresting political opponents? Why were 35 people apparently raided about two or three days ago that were MAGA supporters, right? And I said to him, I said, yeah, they're about to have some things that happen here in the Dutch government where they'll be posing questions to members of the Dutch government. And I said, you know, you should ask this question. Will you accept American political asylum seekers at this rate? Because we're getting worse than Canada. I mean, we're getting worse than, you'll have American asylum seekers soon, political asylum seekers. The country, as you know, I spent a lot of time in Texas. I'll be back in Texas again soon. I'm moving to Texas. I've already put a footprint down there, and we're being invaded. A couple months ago when I was on your show, I was down in Mexico, right? And I spent 2 weeks down there on the Mexican side at Piedras Negras, watching at the Rio Grande River alone, watching quote unquote migrants cross the Rio Grande night and day, right into the arms of the National Guard, and just accepted, put on buses and taken into America, where they'll be released and allowed to go all over the United States. We're being invaded. Meanwhile, that's clearly what's happening here. It's a replacement strategy. People will say that's a conspiracy theory. I have no time for those people anymore. We're way beyond that. The people that are saying this is a conspiracy theory are either incredibly ignorant, possibly even stupid, or they are the opposition that's helping to create this situation. This is a clear re- replacement strategy, similar to what Stalin did in Ukraine when he did the big famine in 32, 33, the Holodomor. And Mao was a great student of Stalin. He repeated similar in China, killing maybe 50 million people, 50. Nobody knows how many millions of people died in the Holodomor in Ukraine or in China, but they were huge numbers. Nobody starves people like communists, and that's what we're being set up for now, including in the United States. And as you know, since January 2020, I've been warning Americans, you better get prepared. This is going in a bad direction. And you can see it now within, I would say I'm in the last about 2 months, roughly, of nice Europe. Because clearly, you can feel the nip in the air right now. You can feel that winter's coming and they're not going to have enough energy. And despite, the reason that they don't have enough energy, they have enough energy. It's in the ground. For instance, in Netherlands, there's a area near me called Groningen. Groningen has natural gas under the ground, plenty enough to serve all of Netherlands and a large part of the rest of Europe, but they won't pump it out. And it's all because of the same reasons that we've been shut down. Texas and the United States in general is we've got plenty of energy, and yet the leftists, the globalists are, obviously turning out our lights as well. And that's what they're doing here. Same in the UK. Businesses are shutting even as we speak. The UK in general is going bankrupt. And they've got plenty of natural gas as well that's just in the ground. And so meanwhile, we got Poland again chopping down forests as we speak. Romania and Germany chopping down their forests, preparing so that people can stack up firewood, especially in Germany and some of the other countries like Austria, because they can't produce the wood fast enough. And keep in mind, I lived in Germany for 4 years, partly when I was in the army and then later after that as well. And it's not like, so I'm kind of, dialed into the situation in Germany. I've been all over the country many times. What I'm saying is setting the table to say that not everybody in Germany has a fireplace, right? Many of the people, like in the United States, you might have a nice condo in Manhattan, but you don't have a fireplace in it, right? And so likewise in Germany, many of the people, many of the buildings are heated with natural gas, and they just don't have it. Nord Stream 1, there's other sources of gas coming in, but it's just not enough. They're going to run out. And again, keep going back to this other point. They need that natural gas to create, using the Haber-Bosch process, to create these nitrogen-based fertilizers, which are feeding a large part of the world, right? Many of the plants in the United States also are either shut down from creating nitrogen-based fertilizers, or their outputs are sharply reduced. And this is going to have a massive impact next year. Our crop reports, as you know, are coming out right now in the United States. Tomatoes are mostly destroyed in California, for instance, from drought. Corn, obviously not doing so hot, and so many other things as well. So we're setting the conditions. It's all about conditions. I'll tell you what, 2023, this winter that's coming up, 2022, 2023 in Europe is going to be tough. And then 2023, they're clearly going to start to become short on food. That's just the way the math is looking, and it looks pretty solid. It's not very hypothetical at this point. It's pretty clear. So this is setting the table for the winter of 2023, 2024. I mean, if Europe is not in a famine by sometime in 2024, I will be very surprised, very surprised. And look at my track record of predicting when we would get here in the United States. It's been solid, because that's all I do is study this, travel around the United States, travel around the world, go to the factories. Again, I'm going to BASF today and talk with people all over the place, talk with government officials, talk with farmers, talk with everybody. It's very clear that Europe is setting the table to go into a famine.
All right. I'll tell you what, hold tough for this top of the hour break. It's a mandatory break, or we wouldn't take one. You're listening to the voice of me, John B. Wells, host of the program, and Michael Yon. Many regard him as the world's foremost war correspondent. He goes toward the fire. He goes to Ukraine. He goes to Luxembourg. He goes to the border. He goes all over the world, just exactly as he said. And when we come back, I want to ask him if it is possible I'm just wondering how NATO features in all this. The action, the military action in Ukraine, well, the report's been rather quiet about that lately, which suggests to me that, yeah, between the migrants in need and the citizens in need, food, heat, they also have to deal with NATO. We'll be back. This is The Ark.